is owned by Fox and Shankara. Shankara comes around the net, throwing it out in front. There's Fox, who shoots and scores! Dane Fox taking a nice pass from Hunter Shankara, puts the Canucks on the board.
Well, we
Lewski across the Edmonton line for Volk, who shoots and scores! Well, Curtis Volk used traffic in front of Brossoit to go post and in. And just like that, we're back on level terms.
Welcome to the 23rd episode of C4 from CHB. I am Chris Golden at Lightforce, your usual host, back in the big seat. Joined with me today is producer extraordinaire and probably the better part of the C4 podcast, Matthew Lee.
It only took about 18 episodes for you to finally admit what we knew all along, Chris.
Well, I think it's been quite clear to everyone that you bring all the talent. Clay and I simply bring the noise.
Yeah, that's essentially it, actually. That's a good way to put it.
Well, considering Clay and I banter, you go and make us look pretty, produce a wicked podcast, and hey, boom.
Someone's got to put lipstick on a pig around here.
Yeah, you know that's meant to be difficult.
What's going on? What's new with you? You took some time off last weekend. Did you go on a seashell? What were you doing there?
Yeah, I was up there visiting the in-laws. See, now that I'm a married man,
oh,
I have
that must have been fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Actually, you know what? In fairness, it was fun. Good weather. Just hung out. Enjoyed the sunshine. Didn't enjoy the four-hour commute on the way back just with ferries alone, because BC Ferries has decided the best way to go and find efficiency in the system is to create inefficiency.
Yeah, I've covered a lot of stories on that just with regards to waits at ferry terminals, and I hear it's getting worse more than ever.
Yeah, it's not fun. And you'd think on a Sunday that would not be the day you'd want to pull a ferry.
It wasn't even a long weekend either.
No, but still, it's like the first weekend after, you know, summer's over. Anyhow, people don't tune in to listen to us talk about BC Ferries.
Hey, so we normally have Clay tell us what's on his mind lately. Have you touched base with that guy at all lately?
I have, actually. Just this past week, he seems to be keeping himself out of too much trouble.
Yes, he is quite the troublemaker.
But, I think, when Clay does join us a little bit later on in the podcast, he might be able to tell us if he's got anything cooking in the books.
Do you think he's got anything cooking in the books, though?
I do, really? Actually. I think he does. I think, let's see, we're well overdue for, a Clay contemporary.
A Clay contemporary?
Yep.
As in a Clay music video.
Yeah, Clay music video where he plays the piano and some very talented people make him look real good. We've been waiting a things that make you go,
Yep.
And, Clay's taking that back this season for all of these that follow the blog. But I think he's got a few things up his sleeve, and, the season's ramping up. We've got young stars.
Yeah, we got a lot of young stars to get into.
So, Matt, it's been a while. What's been up with you?
Just trudging along, trying to make ends meet, working. I'm going off to Japan in about a month, so I don't know what you two are going to be doing for the next 3 weeks after that.
Bringing the noise,
but you won't have anyone to put a lipstick on a pig.
No, so the podcast, it'll sound like Clay and I are recording it in a porta potty.
Yeah, so you'll be back at the House of Golden is what you're saying.
That's right, with my cheap mic and MacBook Air. The wicked intro that
I'm just impressed you can have a MacBook Air and a microphone in a porta potty.
Well, you balance one sort of on the little urinal thing, and then there's the this is going
just
sideways.
No one step in the blue liquid, okay?
Yeah, try not to this time.
Let's get you set now with the Prospects Camp Primer. This is a new drop, Clay, Chris, so listen in.
Start worrying about the Vancouver Canucks and stop worrying about us.
Houston, we have a problem.
Hey, if I saw myself in clothes like those, I'd have to kick my own ass.
Bueller.
Some other refs like OJ tonight, he's taking it personal.
The problem is there's a number of scumbags that work in that industry, and those maggots screw it up for everybody else, and it's that simple.
I'm not the first guy to do it. I'm not the last guy to do it. I'm not sorry.
that I did it.
You have a problem? Turn off your station.
You can't be serious. You cannot be serious.
But that was a cheap shot by a young kid.
He's an idiot.
This isn't rock bottom. I don't know what is.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Okay, you got to admit, that's pretty good.
That was pretty good. It's like you've done this for a while.
That was good. I mean, I managed to dig back and get some old clips here. You heard Mark Crawford there at the end, and you heard a little Mike Tyson as well. There's some good clips in there.
I'm glad you didn't have the more recent Mike Tyson clip from...
From when he did his latest TV appearance in Toronto.
That's correct.
But that was pretty good, too. Pretty sure that'll be used somewhere down the road.
Except with the beep.
Yeah. You know. I have two versions that I made over the weekend as well, so we'll see the next one next weekend.
Cool.
I'm sad that Clay wasn't here to listen to that. I know he would have been rolling in the aisles.
But we know he'll be listening to the podcast like the thousands of others who do every week.
That is correct. We have to appeal to our adoring thousands of fans and our huge following. All right, Chris, let's get right into it. Prospects camp already underway. The Vancouver Canucks fresh off the heels of meeting the Edmonton Oilers prospects. Let's talk about who impressed, who didn't, and what we can take away from what we saw on Friday night. Going into this game, Utica head coach Travis Green, who was behind the bench for the Vancouver Canucks that night and will be throughout the weekend as the prospects camp tournament continues, he wanted to pair Bo Horvat with Hunter Shinkarik. He paired Brendan Gaunce with Nicholas Jensen and Curtis Volk with Mike Zalewski. First of all, what's your take on the usage of pairs in the prospects tournament?
It sounds like Alain Vigneault might be back in the building.
A little bit. Does sound like him. But you know what? That's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, I mean, you look at how the Canucks are built. They're built around pairs, and I think that goes from the top line with the Sedins. When you have two players who will not be split up, or when they are, it's because, you know, all hell's broken loose. It would make sense that the rest of the team somewhat follow suit, because you're going to have that sort of spare wheel on each of those lines. And I would imagine Utica is, it sounds like, at least from all that we've heard, is going to be more of a team built to develop into the Canucks, whereas last season, word has it, Torts never made, you know, lift up the phone.
Well, I'm going to get into what I thought of the camp or what I thought of the players in that game. I'll start with Bo Horvat because everyone wants to know what they thought of Bo Horvat in the first game. It was a bit of a meh game from Bo Horvat. I mean, he didn't look flashy. He looked like a guy who knows that he has to play a strong and responsible two-way game, and that's the billing that he's really going to live up to. But he also looked like a guy who was a bit tentative. He didn't want to take too many offensive chances, which is fine. For me, I would characterize his game as a little too safe, in my opinion. Again, he was paired with Hunter Shinkarik, who conversely was very happy to take offensive opportunities. You caught him down low behind the goal line quite often, trying to stir up pucks and drama. You heard earlier in that drop, he threw a puck on net, which Dane Fox took the opportunity to capitalize on. Hunter Shinkarik was interesting, I thought. He looked like a guy who was still coming back from a very serious hip surgery, but ultimately, given that, he didn't look too bad given that situation. So your thoughts first on Hunter Shinkarik coming back from a serious hip surgery.
Well, Shinkarik's got a year on Horvat, doesn't he?
I believe he's a year older than him, yes, but he still missed a year of development with the injury.
No, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Horvat, you know, but with Shinkarik, there's a maturity that, you know, his year will give him, injury regardless. And I think Shinkarik sort of sees this, the depth of the team above him, and knows that he needs to produce, especially when you have Bo Horvat, soon Jake Virtanen, soon Jared McCann, so on and so forth. Look at the Canucks organization as a whole. You don't get many opportunities to crack the main roster before you're declared a bust, and I think Shinkarik knows the history as well. So he's going to go and show the coaches, hey, I think I belong here.
Dane Fox was on that line, and again, he was the beneficiary on a goal which helped the Canucks pull within to a 2-1 lead over the Edmonton Oilers. Dane Fox, what really jumped out for me on the page was the fact that he's got a great shot, and that shot from Hunter Shinkarik that we saw, the puck was rolling, and Fox just let the puck fly off his stick to beat Laurent Brossoit for the goal. You know, Dane Fox is a guy who scored many, many goals last year in the OHL playing with Connor McDavid and the Erie Otters. This is a guy who impressed me a little bit last night given that. So he's got a pro-level shot. The rest of his game, though, remains to be seen. So, first of all, how much does a pro shot get you very far?
Well, look at the Canucks. They've always liked the guy with the cannon, guy with the either, you know, let me rephrase that. Guy with a cannon or, you know, someone
scoring touch.
The scoring touch, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dane Fox, would have needed to have something to get the attention last season as he did. I mean, here's someone who, you know, went relatively unnoticed and fell into the Canucks' lap. Mm-hmm. So for the Canucks to actually go and put pen to paper, they needed to see something, especially with, again, back to that point, there are a lot of guys that could fill the same role that Dane Fox potentially could.
AHL fodder, though, ultimately?
Oh, I think so. We're going to get into this a little bit later in the podcast, but I don't know where a player like Dane Fox or a Hunter Shinkarik or whomever cracks the roster.
All right, let's move on to people who I was not impressed by, and let's start with Brendan Gaunce with Nicholas Jensen. I mean, I know these are two guys who have been in the system for a couple years now, but they looked just that. I mean, Jensen played, I would say, uninspired is the best way to characterize it. I mean, he was a guy who's been here for about 3 years now, I believe, and he didn't look like he knew he had anything to prove. I mean, I think we all know the kind of chops Nicholas Jensen had. But for, again, a guy who's competing in his third prospect tournament, you'd expect him to dominate because, again, he has NHL-level experience. But he didn't seem to do that much against the Edmonton Oilers. What do you think about a guy like Nicholas Jensen and his, quote, uninspired performance?
Well, it's funny that you mention it because I thought prior to that game he was the one kid that might have a chance to at least crack the roster to maybe find his way to the press box.
But do you think he already knows he's going to be at main training camp?
That could be very well the case.
And right? He has nothing left to prove at the prospects camp?
No, but
he's just there for show, possibly?
But that's taking a huge risk on his part because, you know, think of the organization as it is today, from Benning down to Willie Desjardins. Yeah. It's a you work hard, you play hard, prove yourself, and we in turn reward you. It's that meat and potato style. And if you're going to go and take that risk where, hey, I know I'm going to the big camp, they're watching. And so could that perception become reality regardless of him lighting it up in the preseason?
It took you 10 minutes into the show to drop the meat and potatoes term, didn't it?
Meat and potatoes. Well, I'm a meat and potatoes kind of guy.
Brendan Gaunce, he looked okay, but you know what? We've talked and we talked with Patrick Johnson last week. I don't know if you heard it, by the way.
I did.
An award-winning podcast performance by Patrick Johnson
of
the Vancouver province. And you can follow him on Twitter at Rising Action, by the way.
And I'd just like to declare some umbrage here that you and him were going to kick Clay and I off the podcast.
Yes, we didn't address that earlier in the show, but yeah, that is the plan.
Okay.
But getting back to Brendan Gaunce, he was a fan, or at least Patrick Johnson was a fan heading into prospects camp, but he didn't look that much faster than Patrick had touted him as. Maybe, again, there was some tentativeness there, and I think being saddled with a guy like Nicholas Jensen, he knew that he had to be a bit more responsible than Nicholas Jensen might have been. That's just my first observations. We'll see how the rest of camp plays out, but Brendan Gaunce, again, a bit of a meh performance, probably a little more meh than Bo Horvat. Let's continue on the forwards. Curtis Volk scored the second goal for the Vancouver Canucks. Off a great shot, too, by the way. This is a guy who was brought in as an invite to prospects camp. Only 5'9", but he played a lot with Hunter Shinkarik when he was healthy last season with Medicine Hat. What does that tell you about a guy who, again, like Dane Fox, shows some scoring touch?
Well, let's be real. The Canucks missed scoring touch throughout the entire season last year. They saw it completely disappear at the end of the season previous and got swept in four. So at this point in time, I think any player that shows that they're skillful around the net is going to get a good long look. And with Curtis Volk, he continues to do this in the Young Stars. He's obviously going to make his way to the main camp. But again, we reach this problem. Who from the Young Stars or who isn't already a Vancouver Canuck on the main team, breaks into the roster. Scoring touch or not, I think they're going to go with the tried, tested, and true, at least for the start of the season.
All right, I mean, I agree. I mean, do you think that just based off this one performance alone that Curtis Volk at least deserves a look or at least merit into making it into main camp? Or is that a bit of a stretch at this point?
I think that's a stretch. I mean, outside of the fact that he's a Medicine Hat Tiger and therefore apparently that gives him an inside edge because the Canucks' third jersey will be Tigers, I don't see him finding his way beyond the main camp if he makes it. And I think if he continues, as you said, to show that he's got some potential, it doesn't hurt to take him to main camp.
If I'm not mistaken, I do believe Volk is still qualified to go back to the WHL Medicine Hat Tigers. So maybe at this point it would be premature to suggest the Canucks will sign him to a pro-level contract when he's still eligible to go back. But That said, I think he may get an AHL look, at least with Utica, in the next couple of years. Who else did not impress me? Frank Corrado. You know, this is a guy who also played on the Vancouver Canucks towards the end of last season, so he does have, like Nicholas Jensen, some NHL experience, so you would expect him to at least be a presence, especially on the power play, but he didn't look that flashy. And for me, and I saw this on Twitter from a lot of people, the comparisons were, quote, the bad side of Kevin Bieksa, some casual Kev moments. When you get compared to casual Kevin Bieksa, that's a problem. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting how far Corrado's fallen, because, you know, we were previously comparing him to be the next Chris Tanev, the Canucks defenseman who skates around the ice with a cigarette hanging from his lower lip. Mm-hmm. What's changed? Like, what has happened to Corrado where he went from this young kid, this rookie who simply made no mistakes, to now someone being compared with casual Kev? I mean, if he's turning into Kevin Bieksa, I got no issue with that. You know, I'll take the casual part if you get all the rest of the juice part. But in fairness, that doesn't seem to be Corrado's style.
I think what sticks out for me for Corrado over the last couple seasons since he came into the Canucks system is that you expect progress to be made in his development, and so far it just seems very slow. And I know that being a defenseman, that could be the case, but you expect Corrado to at least take some steps forward in his development. And again, in a prospects game against a lot of green players in the Edmonton system, you would have thought he would have at least shown a little bit more flash than he did. So I'll reserve judgment on Frank Corrado, but judging by Twitter's overall reaction and the casual Kev comparisons, there should be at least half a red flag there for Frank Corrado. You know who else impressed me that isn't currently Vancouver Canucks property is goaltender Austin Lotz. He's now with the Everett Silvertips, I believe, but he held the Vancouver Canucks in it in that first period. The Edmonton Oilers really pressing the issue against the Canucks throughout that first period. I believe the shots were 20-3 or something after one frame, and he looked good. The lateral movement was there, and you know, we could talk to Kevin Woodley about what he thought of Austin Lotz, but I mean, it's a long shot that he gets a pro-level contract with Vancouver just given their current logjam at the goaltending position, but you can't help but at least give him props for his performance. He could be a good ECHL option down the road. Your thoughts on adding another goaltender to the prospect cupboard?
Well, again, this is another position that the Canucks have always had trouble in, and I think building up many pieces in that cupboard is probably good for the Canucks, because we go through goaltenders like they're going out of style. We bring in an elite goaltender, we chase him out of town. Bring in an elite goaltender, chase him out of town. What's interesting is that you got Thatcher Demko, who's not here. He's obviously gone back to college, and
that's another one who started. We forgot to mention.
And if you're a goaltender who's going to have to take a look, that Demko is probably the Canucks' future. That's the way he was touted at the season ticket holder summer summit. I would be apt to try to stand on my head in the Young Stars tournament to say, hey, I'm still here. And you're right, maybe he finds his way down to the ECHL, where, what would that be, to Kalamazoo? Is that the
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so he finds himself into Kalamazoo, but you got to build that up. And as a goaltender, the great thing going for him is the fact that goaltenders don't actually mature until they hit their 30s. So he's got a lot of time to grow, develop, work his game to that at the NHL level, and then maybe if it's not with the Canucks, it's with another NHL team.
Again, despite Austin Lotz's pretty stellar performance against the Edmonton Oilers, highly unlikely he even gets invited to main camp. You know, you look down the depth chart, you already have Ryan Miller as the incumbent number one. There could be a battle for number two between Eddie Lack and Jacob Markstrom. I don't know who's two and who's three. And then there's already Joakim Eriksson and Joe Cannata who are in the mix as well. So, you know, as well as Austin Lotz has played in that one performance, very tough situation for him to even get a look. But he could get a look somewhere else, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Given what I've fed you on prospects thus far, are you surprised by any of these observations? I mean, coming into prospects camp in Penticton, who did you expect to be impressive or invisible?
Well, the player that I would have actually expected to be impressive was Nicholas Jensen. Like, again, it's the fact remains, if he wants to, you know, break into the roster, he's got the best opportunity he's going to have. Now it would be his, you know, third or fourth line, and quite likely probably interchange with someone else from the press box. Beyond that, you know, everyone's sort of already writing, you know, Bo Horvat's name down on a piece of paper, and I don't know how Bo Horvat fits into the team unless he's so good at this young age that he's a second-line center, because as we know, the Canucks have third-line centers stocking their cupboard nice and full.
Very quickly then, given what we know so far, if you were to give me your prediction on who will get invited to main camp, can you rattle off a few names that you think will be invited?
Well, Horvat and Shinkarak are both going to get invited to the main camp, even if it's just to give them a little seasoning before Horvat goes back down to junior. And then I guess Shinkarak would probably have to go to junior as well, because I think he's not old enough to join the AHL.
No, I think he is old enough to join the AHL. I think he's going into his year 20, his age 20 season.
Okay.
He should be eligible to be in Utica. I guess the same still sort of thing rings true for Nicholas Jensen and Gaunce main camp.
I think so. And, you know, Gaunce, the knock on him has always been his skates. It's that he can't seem to move. And I'm interested to see what the Canucks do with him. I mean, he's been pegged to make this team, or at least try to push to make the team. And a season where it doesn't look like there's even a spot to do so. Is there any benefit to send him back down the AHL once again, or is this something or someone that might need a new place to play, similar to Schrader?
It's a tough call. Who else do we see? Curtis Volk, again, has been impressive. I think he'll get an invite into main camp, but that's just me. Would you quickly, yes or no for Curtis Volk?
I'd give him a look. I mean, there's no harm, no foul there. Player that I think is probably going to get to the camp is Cole Castles.
Despite the motto?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Canucks will want to go. I mean, let me rephrase this. If he's healthy, obviously mononucleosis is a tough one, because even after you've recovered, you're still having to avoid contact. But if he's healthy enough, I think he comes to main camp, because I was listening to Mark Crawford actually describe him as being a more developed and well-rounded player compared to his father, Andrew Castles. And Andrew Castles,
that's high praise.
And I remember Andrew at his team. He was a second-line center, and when he left, the Canucks had a significant hole and have yet to actually find anyone not named Ryan Kesler to fill it.
Since we're talking about Cole Castles already, I've had private discussions with some friends of mine who, by the way, brought to my attention that Cole Castles is still eligible to play for Team Canada at the World Juniors. I mean, I know that could be a long shot, but given what you've said about Crawford giving him high praise, I don't think it's incredibly out of the question. So Cole Castles, someone to keep an eye on. I assume Frank Corrado also getting an invite into main camp?
Oh, yeah. Corrado is going to come show what he can do, and hopefully shows an improved level of play back into the Chris Tanev world. But do you need two Chris Tanevs on your team?
No, but you'd also like to see two Chris Tanevs battle out to see who's the better Chris Tanev, if that makes any sense.
It does, and it's Chris Tanev.
Yeah, I know. But it'll be good experience for Corrado nonetheless.
Anton Cederholm. Do you think he makes it?
You didn't notice Cederholm too much last game, but I'd like to see a little bit more development from him. I know that a lot of people question his overall smarts, and I know Patrick was saying the same thing last week. So I think it's still a long shot for Cederholm. He's one of those guys who's really going to be a project player more than anything. So he's a lot less polished than Corrado. We'll very quickly mention Jordan Subban. Has some moves. You know, you noticed it against the Edmonton Oilers, and you think that he'll develop a little bit better, but I think it's a little too soon for prime time on Jordan Subban. Your thoughts very quickly.
We all want him to be the next PK.
It's not going to happen, though. No. You know, the interesting thing is about the Subban family is apparently they're all very small for the most part, and PK is the outlier in the sense that he's a lot big and burly, which is interesting, by the way.
Well,
maybe Jordan Subban will hit a growth spurt. That would be the ideal situation if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan.
Well, what is he, 19 right now?
He's 19. I think he's like 5'10 or something like that.
Yeah, 19. And the Canucks here have him as 5'9, 179. And that 179 is probably soaking wet.
Yeah.
So, okay, maybe.
In a perfect world, Subban could get an extra 2 inches, 3 inches.
Maybe, but.
And an extra 10, 15 pounds. But again, it's unlikely.
And I ask you this. How much is PK Subban and his name helping his brethren out?
I think it helps him, obviously, a little bit. But that said, Jordan Subban looks like the kind of guy who wants to make it based on his play,
yeah.
not as opposed to the name that's on the back of his jersey. So, again, we're all speculating here, and I think Jordan Subban is likely headed back to the OHL and not to main camp. But it does bear mentioning that he is making some strides, and the skill is there. Very quickly, yes or no, Dane Fox, main camp.
Sure, why not?
Sure, why not? We're giving everybody main camp invites.
Well, it's relatively local in Whistler. I don't see any harm. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you come to camp and stay for very long.
Yeah.
And let's keep it real here. The Canucks have a split squad, you know, first game or first preseason game, I think a team in San Jose and a team here. So you need bodies to fill the bench in both of those rinks.
You mentioned earlier Cole Castle's not at camp with Mono, and Jared McCann as well, bears mentioning, is not at camp. Also with Mono. I'm not saying it's weird, but it's kind of weird that they're both with, quote, Mono, the kissing disease.
Or I shared a water bottle and I liked it.
You're creepy.
Yes, I am.
I may be bizarre sometimes, but I'm very rational.
He pisses me off.
Don't you ever talk about me! Don't you open your mouth about the best! Or I'm gonna send it for you real quick!
Everybody's doing something, we'll do nothing!
My contract sucks. Yeah, I'd scrap it if I could right now.
I don't care what CB says, anybody has to say, quite honestly. They don't know what's happening. So I really don't give a shit what they say.
Easily our worst game of the year. We didn't deserve a point.
You dirt-eating piece of slime! You scum-sucking pig! You son of a motherless goat!
You're in paradise. Keep your mouth shut.
Okay, this guy is a real zero. That's true.
He's crazy. He's dangerously crazy.
Wow, Matt. You've really outdone yourself again.
I know.
I will, because, you know, I recognize the voice. Really dug that you worked in a little Steve Martin.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You know. And I'm curious what it's like to be a son of a motherless goat.
That was good, though, eh?
It was. It was really good. I mean, it was, I think it really encapsulated, you know, what we might talk about when it's half full and half empty.
I know. Clay wasn't here for the first one. Clay, you should have seen the first one.
I can't wait to hear the podcast when we release it. I'm sure it's going to be great.
Well, you and 1,000 others.
This is weird. I feel like I'm reuniting with some old friends or old family. Well, emphasis on the old, not the family.
Well, it's been, we talked about this. Matt and I chatted how it's been such a long time. You know, you and I have been gone. Matt's already tried to replace us.
Yes, and quite well, I think, too.
Yeah, well, and we keep in mind, though, Matt is going to Japan for like a month. And so we've already determined that it'll be you, me.
That's the comeback.
The microphone, the MacBook Air, either in my house or a porta potty.
Sounds good. 7 hour, Matt. Oh, not yet. Sorry, man.
All right. Let's talk about main camp, Chris.
Yeah, so we were all putting together what we thought might be a roster. I only put together who I thought was going to make the team as opposed to the entire main camp. And if you could see Matt right now, he is staring vast amounts of disapproval.
You guys had two things to do.
What were they?
Well, you had to identify at least which prospects impressed you at the game yesterday, and the other thing was to put together a list of what you believe is the opening night roster.
Well, I have that.
Oh, you have the actual, like with lines, though?
Oh, I got the lines.
Yeah. Oh, you did it too, Clay?
Oh, of course.
Well, one out of two ain't bad, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. Continue, Chris.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna start off here. I'm just going to run through what I have as our opening night roster. I simply focused on the lines, not who's going to find their way to the press box. It's obvious I'm going to have the Sedins with Verbata, and I would be surprised if the three of us didn't actually agree on that. From there, I figure that Cassian and Burrows will be with Bonino.
Wait, hang on. So, Clay, I also have the Sedins with Verbata. Do you have the same?
I do, too, and I'm going to go as far as to say they're even going to start the game. How's that?
All right, easy there. You know, Nosferatu. Okay.
Don't
sorry.
Go too far to the edge, Clay.
Sorry to interrupt. Chris, go with your second line, and then Chris or Clay and I will give our second line.
Okay, so I got Cassian with Bonino and Burrows.
I have Burrows left wing, Bonino center, Cassian right wing. on the second
line. I could not agree more with you guys. Gosh, no wonder we get along so well.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay, third line, Chris.
I got Hansen and Higgins with Lyndon Vay.
All right, I'm breaking the streak here. I have Higgins on the left wing, Hansen on the right wing, but I have Sean Mathias centering the third line.
I think I'm going to go with my fellow Richmond brother. I do indeed have Lyndon Vay between the two H's, even though I think Hansen will find his way to the press box within five games.
Wow, that's a bold statement.
Yeah, that's how you get Horvat in. Oh, I just spoiled my next part. Okay.
Well, Clay, why don't you tell us what's on your fourth line?
Okay, my fourth line, I have Brad Richardson, the quintessential fourth line player, centering Sean Mathias and Derek Dorsett.
Okay, I'm going to say ditto because I actually have Richardson between Mathias and Dorsett.
Okay, so the only thing that we all three of us don't disagree on is I have Vay as my fourth line left winger and I have Sean Mathias as my third line center, and you guys have it the other way around.
Right, so we agree that Sestito of the pros so far, the 13 forwards, Sestito will be the one in the press box. Agreed?
Yeah, and I have the same, and I have Jensen as my first call-up from the minors.
Chris, what about you?
Sestito is going to be up top, and that's just simply based on the fact that I think he only gets inserted into games where they need a little more meat, less potatoes.
Yeah.
I actually had Jensen being the closest to making the big club, so I'd probably have to agree with my boy Matt that he's first to be called up to.
So, given what we both, what all three of us really have, neither of us have Bo Horvat cracking the roster, so is anyone surprised at that?
Well, I'm not. Like, if you were to consider, you know, Bo Horvat, yeah, sure, he has nothing left to prove in junior, but being as young as he is, if he's not going to get some serious development time here in Vancouver, let him continue to mature down there, or if not mature, become more seasoned. I don't know how to describe it any other way.
All right. Clay, what do you think? Are you surprised that no Bo Horvat?
No, I'm not surprised. You just hear what Benning's been talking about recently, and you just know of his history and his track record and his desire to, and his attitude to develop guys quite slowly. I think with Horvat's only 18 still, right?
Yeah,
he still has to go back to London if he's not on the Canucks.
I think he's got 2 years.
And then how does it work? I'm probably going to show my ignorance. Can they call a junior up as much or as little as they want?
Well, I believe what happens is they can call him up if the junior team will so allow, but after he plays a certain number of games, that burns a year of his NHL eligibility. So we saw that happen with Frankie Corrado when the Canucks called him up near the end of, was that the four swept season?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, thank you, guys. Regardless, I don't see Horvat on the opening night roster just because, as I was saying, I think Benning is fine to let him develop and not to rush him in because he's only 18. They have so many years ahead of him. And why rush him when you have 13 arguably NHL-ready forwards to go already?
Change is coming. Chris, go with your first pairing of defensemen.
I got Hamhuis Bieksa.
Same.
Yeah, same.
Second.
Edler Tanev.
Same.
Same.
And Luca Spisa and Yannick Weber.
Different.
I got Stanton with Spisa.
Yeah, same here.
And
did you just forget Ryan Stanton was still on the team?
No, I actually had put Stanton's name down first.
Yeah.
But then it occurred to me that the Canucks brought Weber in for a reason. And now that, you know, my boy Garrison, the 50-goal scorer who never actually scored 50 goals, is gone.
Yeah.
That's right, the 50 goals. I forgot about that.
Where's the shot from the point? Like, you need at least one person with a cannon. I know Spisa kind of has one, but beyond that, Edler, sure, but Edler's still a flip of a coin. So I think you have Weber simply because he provides more on the power play.
Okay, here's my gripe with that, though, and admittedly, I haven't seen enough of Luca Spisa to judge whether he's more of an offensive defenseman or a defensive defenseman, but if my memory holds correct, Spisa was a defenseman who has some lapses in his own end, and that's why I think you need a guy like Ryan Stanton as opposed to a guy like Yannick Weber, who, as we saw last year, was used almost exclusively on the power play or even as a 13th forward.
You know, fair enough, and that's why I think he would be on the roster is for the power play. But keep in mind, we also had John Tortorella coaching the team where you don't actually have a fourth line or a third pairing on the blue line.
Clay, do you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I just think, you know, much like many of the Canucks are looking to bounce back from tough seasons last year, Spezza in particular has been saying a lot of at least positive and good stuff in the media where he's got a positive outlook. He really wants to do well this year. So, and I just think, so he's a lock. We all agree he'll be number five for now. But I remember Ryan Stanton had a really good start to the season last year, a very surprising start. He was one of our most sturdy guys. Well, Edler and Garrison, those guys were finding their way. And then something happened, and I remember he got caught on, like, every single pinch for like, a month straight, and then his confidence kind of went down from there. But I do remember the start he had last year, and I think he's expecting, and I hope that he does the same thing this year.
Didn't Ryan Stanton get hurt?
Yeah.
Wasn't that maybe?
It was a knee injury.
That could be a confidence breaker for sure.
Regardless of whether or not you have Ryan Stanton or Yannick Weber as your sixth or seventh defenseman, who does everybody have as their eighth?
I remember at the end of last season, I said it would be Frankie Corrado, and you guys probably may have touched on this, that he wasn't so hot in the first Young Stars game, but I still see him as our number eight. There's a couple other guys, though, right? Some older veterans.
Well, first of all, Clay, let me interrupt. I'm glad someone else here did their homework and watched the prospects game besides me.
I just read your notes, Matt.
Oh.
But thank you. Those are great.
Well, you
notes.
Both have let me down then. And this is why Patrick Johnson is going to replace you both on the podcast one day.
Anyways, as you were saying.
Yeah. No, sorry. I interrupted you, Clay.
No, that's it. That's all.
Okay, that's it.
Corrado's my number eight.
Chris, Corrado, you're number eight?
I don't want to say yes, but I look at the roster, and who would it be if it not him? Like, are we talking about the vampiric Bobby Sanguinetti?
What about Kent Huskins?
Yes. Well, you and I chatted about this off air where Kent Huskins plays for the team. I'm only a year older than him.
That means I'm only... Oh, never mind.
You know what? Never mind. No Kent Huskins. I would rather roll the dice on Frank Corrado, who we said has the casual Kev-like tendencies.
Gotcha.
Okay, so let's go for goaltending here. Miller, the undisputed number one. Who does everyone have as number two?
Lack.
Yeah, right, it's Eddie Lack. But does it go without saying that Jacob Markstrom will at least make it tough for him?
Well, this is the problem, though, is, okay, let's say Markstrom makes it tough, and you're the coach, you're Willie Desjardins, and you're like, yep, Markstrom is going to have to be my backup. There's no ifs, ands, or buts here. Lack gets waived and is gone. Same goes for Markstrom. So what do the Canucks as an organization do? Do they let Lack go so that people can honestly go and say, well, let's see, we had Luongo, oh, no, we don't. We had Schneider, oh, no, we don't. Oh, we had Lack, oh, no, we don't.
Well, I mean, those are all valid points, I mean, about the pride issue. But let's remember, Willie Desjardins, Jim Benning, Trevor Linden, all new faces who have no ties whatsoever to Eddie Lack. They don't have to care. They have to take in the best goaltender that gives them the best chance to win as a backup. So I'm not saying that Jacob Markstrom over one offseason is suddenly meteorically better than Eddie Lack. But if he has made at least some sort of improvements over the offseason to justify that he should be the backup over Eddie Lack, who's to say that none of the three are going to say no to him?
Yeah, you got to remember, though, too, that it's not like Eddie Lack played poorly because of skill. He played poorly because Tortorella ran him into the ground or the ice, metaphorically speaking, or not metaphorically. But it's just crazy. Markstrom would have to not only be as good as Lack, but actually surpass him for them to even consider that. I just don't see that happening. I didn't see many flaws in Lack's game last year aside from being fatigued.
So which of those two gets you a bigger return?
In a trade?
In a trade. In a market where there isn't much of one.
There probably, like you said, there isn't much of a market, but there are probably more teams that are interested in Eddie Lack just based off of the amount of games in the amount of time that he played last season, wouldn't you say?
Oh, no doubt. And that's where, to me, if you're going to make the change, you don't make the change through waivers. You make the change through a trade. And
you how old is Eddie? How old is Eddie?
Oh, why are you asking the tough question? So
is he like 25?
Yeah, he was born in 88.
So would you guys think that three years...
So he's 26.
You know, okay, so he's 26. Miller's contract's 3 years. Is 29 too late to say you have a bona fide starting goalie?
Oh, no.
He's already in his prime by then. Yeah. Well, you would assume he would be anyway.
Yeah. I don't see them moving him. I agree that he'd obviously fetch more than Markstrom, but I if he's patient enough and the Canucks are patient enough, I still see him three years from now.
So then if I'm Willie Desjardins and Jim Benning, I want Markstrom to play lights out to actually make us have to consider that decision, increase his potential value, and we trade him, send him somewhere. But I'd hate to be Markstrom and Lack at this point, unless they've had some form of discussion behind closed doors. And it's quite possible, as we know, Benning was talking to Dan Murphy about his big wall and his roster wall.
Well, hold on. We'll get into that.
You did not hear a thing from me.
Okay, I'm going to hijack this topic now. What do you guys think of the bubble players who are on the outside looking in? I mean, it seems like all three of us have a fairly concrete roster united, but there are guys, Nicholas Jensen, Tom Cicito, who we mentioned as the 13th and 14th forwards. There's also Dustin Jeffrey, Kellen Lane, Cal O'Reilly. All those guys are going to be in main camp, as are Kent Huskins, Bobby Sanguinetti, and Luke Hospiza on defense. Or, well, we have Luke Hospiza in the lineup, but what do you guys think of those bubble players? Are they just chopped liver, never to play in the NHL?
I don't see any of those guys that you mentioned, especially among the forward group. I don't see them, you know, and guys like, I guess Archibald's in there too, correct?
Yeah, he's in the mix, but yeah. I doubt, barring catastrophic injuries, he cracks the lineup.
Yeah, so with Jensen, we're already talking about 14, so that's already talking about two healthy scratches on the forward side already. I just don't see any of those guys arguably cracking the lineup anytime soon.
I have to sort of pause here. Cal O'Reilly is Ryan O'Reilly's brother.
Yep.
So can I ask why the Canucks always go for the other brother?
Like, come on, Leo.
They're using it as a draw to get Ryan in.
Is that what's
going on
here?
I don't know. I was just being a doofus, but that is entirely possible.
Well, I just, it's, let's see. We've got Pronger. We got Korea. We got, yeah. We tried the other Fedorov. Like, you know, anyhow, yeah. maybe this is the one. Either that, or at least we know we have a Subban coming up through the system. So Kellen Lane, I think, would be the closest. And I say that because he seems to me to be more well-rounded as a third or fourth line player with the potential to become that sort of power forward.
Yeah.
Archibald, I don't see as being anything more than maybe a Derek Doucette. And you already have Sestito upstairs, mm-hmm. So why would you bring sort of two Doucettes if Sestito is available? I don't know enough about Cal O'Reilly outside of the fact that I just found out he's, you know, Ryan's brother. So, you know, maybe
it looks pretty fixed, like this lineup, yeah. I should say.
Well, yeah, but if let's say injury, that's possible. Knock on wood, it doesn't happen.
So sorry to interrupt. If there's a top six injury, who's your first player to get into the lineup of the starting 12? Jensen?
Oh gosh, yeah. And he probably goes and fills in for that, depending on who it is. I mean, if it's a center, then we start to see Matthias go into the middle, and I think then we see Richardson bump up, Vey bump up.
You know,
it really depends.
And then if there's a bottom six injury, is it Sestito and everyone else moves up and Sestito plays a limited fourth line role?
I actually think Jensen gets in both ways. I think Sestito
really?
Gets... Yeah, I would say Sestito gets into games where...
But here's my gripe with Nicholas Jensen. It's like he's only productive when he's playing with productive people. He's not independent of his line mates.
No, but if you were to consider what the Canucks would probably go and do, is I don't think they'd put Jensen on the fourth line. He'd
no,
be third
but
or
even,
second.
No, but even with, let's say, Higgins and, let's say, Vey as your third line center, do you like Nicholas Jensen as a third line right winger? I don't think he's that effective.
So what doesn't stop Jensen from going in up onto the second line and you would see, you know, Burrows or Cassian drop
down? Oh, I guess that is possible.
Yeah. I actually agree with Chris there. I think Jensen's, he's got to play in the top three lines for sure, not the fourth line. And I do indeed see him getting in the lineup before Sestito. Yeah, Sestito, I really think, despite his 213 penalty minutes last year, I think he's gonna get less than that because he's not going to be playing as much. He was forced to play that much last year because we didn't have anyone else and we had those two goofy games in the California.
Tom Sestito sucks. Just saying.
You should go and say that on Twitter and see what happens.
Yeah. You guys top see the exchange Sestito? Between him and Luongo on Twitter? It's pretty funny.
No, I didn't. What tell us, Clay, what went on?
I think very quickly it got to a point where Sestito tweeted a picture of his first goal was against Luongo, and then Luongo went back at him and said something that had nothing to do with your hands, it was because you're fat, you know what. And then and then Sestito claimed that he tipped the point shot from someone else, and then the guy who shot it, I can't remember, we'll have to look all this up, basically said, yeah, good thing he tipped it, otherwise his shot would have destroyed Luongo. It was quite funny, actually, and they're all having fun with it.
NHL players on Twitter.
Not so secret wall. Let's get into it, Chris.
So, not so secret wall. So we saw, and if you haven't, listeners, you should actually go and look it up. I think it's on Sportsnet, but
you can find it on YouTube now, I think, too.
Yeah, on YouTube. Okay. Well, I watch it on Sportsnet's website. Anyhow, Benning's got this big board on the wall, which has all of the teams and essentially all of the players listed, just to give them some insight as to who they might be able to expect, if there's any players when it comes to, you know, prospective trades, as to what might be available. If someone's asking for so-and-so and doesn't want to offer such-and-such, they can ask for who and who. But what was interesting to note when you watch this is there were a few players on that board who had this green little check mark above them.
Yeah, some sort of green marking. I don't know if it was a check mark, an arrow.
But there was a green mark. And I actually, the other thing I noticed is some boxes had double check marks, and other boxes had either a check mark and an X or a double X.
Okay, so I'm gonna just rattle off the teams that I saw and identified that had double check marks, okay? And you tell me if we can, like, let's put on the detective caps here, all three of us. And let's tell me if we notice any sort of traits that are in common with these teams. The Rangers, Flyers, Blue Jackets, Blackhawks, Avalanche, Blues, Habs, and Wild all had double check marks on them.
Oh, I know. They all finished above the Canucks in the standing last year.
Well, I think you could say that about almost everybody.
Okay,
but
sorry. I thought that was good.
There were some teams, though, that have the X and then a check mark, and in this case, Toronto had that, as did New Jersey. And then Detroit had a question mark and a check mark. But going back to the all checkmark units here, Rangers, Flyers, Blue Jackets, Blackhawks, Colorado, St. Louis, Montreal, Minnesota, my early guess is that these are all teams that Benning expects to make the playoffs.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
See, whereas I looked at that and I was actually wondering if the double checkmarks had more to do with players of interest. Because one of the things I noticed was that many of those groupings had a green mark on it.
And not having seen the video and throwing a third one in there, it could be guys that Benning feels, I'm just throwing this out there, comfortable dealing with, or he has...
Oh, that's possible, too.
Yeah, but I don't know, you know, yeah, who knows?
But yeah, I mean, again, going back to my theory, the Toronto Maple Leafs have an X and a check mark, so I guess that means he's sort of lukewarm on the idea of them making playoffs. He's got an X by New Jersey, he's got an X by Ottawa, so that all seems to sort of point towards teams that are likely to finish out of the playoffs. And then there's a team like Detroit who, like I said, have question marks and a check mark. So I think there's a little bit more uncertainty there. There's also a question mark by Washington.
Right, right. Interesting.
I don't know. It's just interesting. I mean, again, like, if you haven't taken a look, go check it out. It's pretty interesting stuff. It's actually your first look at any sort of possible insight into how Jim Benning operates.
Very methodically, it sounds like.
Chris, there are other names that have, like you said, the green markings. Do you want to rattle off some names there that have the green markings?
Yeah, so we, you know, taking a quick look, we got Brandon Sutter, Ryan Johansson. Now, Ryan Johansson's a player who's constantly coming up as being a target
linked,
of the Canucks.
Yes.
You got Matt Donovan.
Which also, by the way, comes out of left field. I mean, I don't know too much about Matt Donovan.
Oh, I couldn't. First time I've heard his name.
Yeah.
You got Danny DeKeyser, Tyson Berry. A few others that seemingly have shown up, Sammy Vatanen, Ryan O'Reilly, Jaden Schwartz, Jamie McGinn, and the irreplaceable Nino Niederreiter.
Oh yeah, Niederreiter came up. I don't know. Do you think those are all guys that Benning has some interest in?
Well, I look at a player like Niederreiter. Niederreiter looked real good as a kid, and he seems to have either hit a wall or maybe he just hasn't had the situation to allow his development to continue. But I look at him and I wonder, where does he fit in this team? Unless what we didn't see is the Vancouver Canucks. There have been Canucks players with marks by their name who, now the pieces of the puzzle can easily be swapped in and out.
Clay, what do you think? Are we super sleuthers or is this all just crazy talk?
No, I think you guys are onto something. I mean, we are onto something. And you look at all those guys, the majority of them are second, third, fourth year at the most players. So they're all young. Obviously, there aren't any old guys or there aren't any veterans on there. So I think it's maybe he's done some work. He's looked at their contract situation, expiring, qualifying, whatever, maybe restricted, unrestricted. I just think it could be the start of his target list. And and if he's going to be here for a while, I'm sure this list will evolve. But there's some, you know, most of those guys, except for the aforementioned Matt Donovan, I like a lot of those guys on our team.
You want Nino Niederreiter on the team?
I don't. I've liked. I have him in my fantasy pool until I dropped him a couple last year.
The fact you had Nino Niederreiter on your fantasy team shows how well you finished on your fantasy league.
Yeah, I haven't. I haven't won since the first year. But hey, as long as I don't screw up for seven more years, I still have paid. Have it paid for. But that's another thing. You guys don't like Niederreiter?
Well, it's actually. Let me. I'm going to rewind. I'm not going to say I don't like him. I don't see how he fits.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Like, and that's where you look at the Canucks. I mean, we've got a third line, enough third lines to fill the Western Conference.
Yeah.
And Niederreiter is not, in my mind at this time, a second line player, let alone, you know, he's not top six.
What says you, Matt?
I'm a little meh on Niederreiter. He's more of a buy low candidate if the Canucks are actually interested in him.
Right, right.
Well, here we are wrapping up our 23rd episode of C4. The boys are back together. We've got a new season in front of us. I'm pretty darn excited, Matt.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm pretty darn excited, Clay.
Oh, I'm very excited. Change is coming, not only to the team, but to our podcast. I think we're trying to do this a little more often. Is that right?
Yeah, and we had talked over the summer and really, you know, with listeners and the fact that many of you have been sort of asking, where's C4? I really enjoy it. We're actually going to go and aim to try to bring our podcast to you twice a week.
Wow. That's four times over every 2 weeks.
That's a lot of airtime for Clay, especially. As if that guy doesn't need enough attention these days.
I got to step my game up, brothers.
That's right. Now you'll have, like, instead of just a music video, you'll have to actually start producing songs for radio.
See what I can do.
You know, I'm still waiting. Like, in my head, I do this every week. I'm still waiting for Clay to drop his first name of the show, and he still hasn't done it.
I didn't drop my first name.
No,
he's name dropper.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm saving that up for the regular season. Trust me.
Okay, because Matt brings up a good point, Clay, is that I think that often when you go and you're like, oh, did you know I was talking to so-and-so? But
I'll save up a good one for the regular season, I promise you guys.
Okay, well, I just want to drop a name here. I was talking to Matt Lee from CKNW, and boy, it was cool.
I envy you.
You guys should both be very privileged.
We should be. But I guess oh, wow. You know, it's like we're reliving Guardians of the Galaxy here.
We're going with the Guardians of the Galaxy theme. Clay, can you hear this over the phone?
I can. I thought it was someone whispering at me at first.
Why would someone be whispering that?
I don't know. I must be hungry. I'm getting confused.
Well, based on the conversation we had before we started recording, someone could be whispering it, Clay.
We're just going to use this as our outro here, by the way. So
like
I'm just
it.
Playing it in the background.
This is good.
So, yeah, I know. That's why I'm playing it. So very quickly, you want to wrap things up, Chris?
Yeah, for all you listeners who have got here to the end, thank you. You know where you can find us. It's CanucksHockeyBlog.com. We're also on Facebook, Facebook.com/CanucksHockeyBlog. And on Twitter, we are at CanucksHockey. I am Chris Golden at Lightforce on Twitter. As always, joined by and wrapping up with Clay, who is...
Clay Emo at Canuck Clay on Twitter, and our esteemed host and producer, our co-host and producer,
Matt Lee at MattLee980 on the Twitter machine.
Well, I think that's a wrap, guys. And having listened to the last podcast episode, I don't know if I'm well, any.
That's okay. You guys have redeemed yourself.
Well, I was gonna throw you to the last words.
Well, no, I don't need to do the last words. But if you want me to say it, I'll do it. So, on behalf of Chris Golden, Clay Emo, and myself, we're out. I'm high on believing that you're